Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, November the 15th. Absolutely beautiful day here in North Texas. As we like to do on every week, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots to get into, lots and lots to get into. So let me say hello to Bill. Bill, how's the weather in New York?
The actual weather, it looks very nice outside. It's sunny. It's reasonable in temperature. The political weather is stormy and dark and threatening, and we expect a real year of hot politics in New York.
I bet. In fact, I've got a question for you a little bit later about this little back and forth between Black Lives Matter and the mayor-elect. Which is very interesting. Maybe you can bring us up to date on that. But let me begin with something that many of the listeners may be aware of. Last night, CNN ran on their website a story. I don't know if this was on the air, but it was on their website. So, because I don't watch CNN, so I don't know if they actually had it on the air. But it was on their website, and it created a lot of controversy, Bill, as you know, because it was basically saying that the Biden staff and the Harris staff were not getting along very well with one another, and there was even somebody speaking, anonymous source, saying that he thinks they're trying to take out Kamala. I mean, it got ugly. It got ugly in this report, so ugly that at 9 o'clock the press secretary had to come out and say, everything is fine. You know, she's part of our team, and everything is fine, you know. I was surprised to see all of this, Bill. Not that they're having problems, but that it may have gotten so bad that the White House has to issue a statement. So I've never seen anything like that before, Bill. Maybe you can help us understand it a bit.
Well, actually, there is a history of presidents and vice presidents not getting along, and of vice presidents being dumped. The most famous case of dumping, of course, was that of Henry Wallace in 1944, when President Roosevelt was going for his fourth term. It was obvious to everybody around Roosevelt that he was dying. Nothing was said publicly. That was the tradition at the time, that the president's health was a personal matter, a bad tradition. And they had to, that Wallace could not be president, even though he was vice president, because he was much too far to the left. And the Democratic Party proceeded to dump him and replace him with Harry Truman, a very good choice. That was one case that was very famous. Another one was the case of Lyndon Johnson and Jack Kennedy. Jack Kennedy chose Lyndon Johnson as his running mate, despite the fact that just about everybody believed that Johnson had far more seniority and far more experience than Kennedy did. He chose him to lock up the state of Texas in the election. And it was pretty obvious during the administration that Johnson had very little to do and was kind of marginalized. I mean, Kennedy really didn't like him. He didn't like Kennedy. But it was simply a political marriage. The other case that we can think of is one of Eisenhower and Nixon. Nixon was Eisenhower's vice president. I don't know why he chose him in 1952, but he did. But when it came time to endorse Nixon in 1960 for the presidency, Eisenhower was very slow, and he was asked famously, it became a very famous question, what has Mr. Nixon done that impresses you, or something to that effect? And he said, well, if you give me a week, I'll think of something. And it was obviously seen as a bit of a rebuke. He did eventually endorse Nixon, but without much enthusiasm. So we've had these debates before. This is unique, however, in the fact that, first of all, she is the first female vice president we've ever had, the first person of color to be vice president we've ever had. Mm-hmm. And because of Biden's obviously failing health, somebody who was seen as probably the person who's going to be president. She has gotten very unpopular. That is not new. She was unpopular as a presidential candidate and had to withdraw from the race for the presidency before the first ballot was even cast because her polling was so low, it was embarrassing. And as vice president, she has done no better. She was picked basically because she checked off two boxes. She's female and she's of color. That's not a very good way to pick anybody for anything. And she has not impressed anyone. Now, whether that's her fault or somebody else's, I don't have the inside story. She obviously is not being given much real responsibility. She obviously does not present herself with any real authority and does not seem to be terribly knowledgeable about things. However, it could be that she is being marginalized by the president because the president might be afraid of her. He doesn't want her to become the star of the administration. So whatever is going on, it isn't good. It isn't healthy for the country, and it isn't healthy for the party. I would imagine that one of the things that some of the people in the White House wish for more than anything else is for her to resign. Mm-hmm. And it's possible she will. She's already given hints, apparently, that that she feels there's racism in the Biden administration and that she's being kept down because of that. You know, this is what they fall back on because these are people who basically are out of date already. The Kamala Harris crowd, that crowd, really, that dog doesn't hunt anymore. They tried it in Virginia and then wound up with a black lieutenant governor who, as she said, has been black all her life. They accused the voters who voted for her as being racist. I mean, it's all they have left. And I think she's putting out these feelers, these little comments, because she wants to threaten them. She wants to be in a position to yell racism if she is forced down. And I think it's the worst possible thing she can do. The best thing she could do would probably be either stick it out, but she may feel that the only way she would have a future in politics is if Biden died, because I don't think she would be on the ticket in 2024.
Exactly.
There's nothing there for her. They would offer her a way out. They'd offer her a Supreme Court judgeship, for which she is completely unqualified, but who cares in their world. Or they'd offer her another cabinet position, or offer her the chance to be governor of California if that were available, and they could swing it. But I don't think they want her around. She's at a 28% approval, and her approval rating is hurting the president rather than helping. Vice presidents have basically a function. Their function is to be quiet, wait around, and to help the president stay in power. And she's not doing that.
That's right. What surprises me, Bill, about all of this, you're correct about these other disputes between, you know, back with Truman or FDR and Wallace and Nixon and Eisenhower and LBJ and Johnson. But to my knowledge, Bill, none of that happened. Well, I'm pretty sure it didn't happen in the first 10 months of the presidency. What is so amazing about all of this is that this should be, in many ways, the first year of the president is usually their best year politically. They start to decline a little bit in the fall because the honeymoon is over and we start getting into the real world a little bit. But I've never seen anything like this, especially with the vice president. I mean, yes, I'm sure that they would like to dump her, but I didn't think they would even consider doing that, Bill. In the middle of November, I thought they might want to consider that in November 23, looking ahead to the re-election, let's say. But this is so weird for me. And what is even stranger is the press secretary having to come out and, you know, and basically say, no, all that fighting you're hearing inside is okay. You know, they both get along well, and she's part of the team. And she's got some great responsibilities and so on and so on, but she doesn't. I mean, she's I think, Bill, one of the reasons I believe she's so unpopular is because she was given an extremely important task, the border, and she didn't take it seriously at all. She took a trip to Central America, made a stop here in El Paso, has not been seen or even talking about any of this. And I think for a lot of Americans, maybe that's a bit insulting, Bill, that, you know, she has a major responsibility but doesn't seem to care about it. I mean, that's my sense, Bill. That's where I'm coming from with her. You know, she's the vice president. I know that. And she's a heartbeat away from the president. Everybody knows that. But my gosh, she could take her job more seriously, Bill.
Well, it's an interesting impression that you have, and I have the same impression. On the other hand, some would argue she does take it seriously, but she's not being allowed to do anything. And that's another possibility. You know, I mean, Nelson Rockefeller, when offered the vice presidency, said, I'm not standby equipment. Did he get to be vice president? I don't think so. It was Gerald Ford who got to be vice president. And
right.
Gerald Ford, of course, succeeded Richard Nixon. So
right.
Nelson made the wrong choice.
Nelson would have been president. Sorry to interrupt you, Bill, but I believe, I don't want to get off too far off the topic here, but I believe that Gerald Ford then later made or nominated Nelson Rockefeller to be his vice president. But then when he ran in 76, Bob Dole ran with him. So Nelson did make it to the vice presidency in 74.
I'm not sure.
We can check that later.
Bob Dole ran for president in you might be right. Was it? Oh dear. Was it Bob Dole or was it Jack Kemp? I'm going to look that up.
No, Bob Dole ran Kemp was his running mate in 96. So it was Bob Dole and Kemp in 96.
In 1976,
then Representative Bob Dole was President Ford's running mate, and the vice president at that time was Nelson Rockefeller, who came in after Nixon had resigned. So kind of a long-winded U.S. history. But anyway, your point is well taken, that when you're vice president, you just sit around hoping that create any trouble.
You're right. 1976, Gerald Ford at the top of the ticket, Bob Dole at the bottom of the ticket.
That's right.
And, of course, they lost to Jimmy Carter, which is unfortunate. It became one of our worst presidents. It's amazing how I forgot that history. But I think this is a very interesting test case of where we are politically. Yes, Nelson Rockefeller was vice president. You're quite right. A very interesting point about Kamala Harris. She's coming in right after the Virginia election, which I think told us a great deal about where the country is and where the country wants to go. We are in the middle of, I think, a very serious and very widespread parents' revolt in this country about the education of their children. And the Democratic Party has been absolutely flat-footed about it and tone-deaf. I mean, you don't go out and attack American parents, and that's what they're doing because they represent the teachers' unions. And she is coming in as somebody who has never proved her popularity and electability at anything above the senatorial level in California. And when she ran for the Senate in California, I mean, any Democrat who had a pulse could be elected. We pointed out before, when she ran for president, she did not even wait for the first vote to be cast to withdraw from the race because she was so unpopular. When she was named the vice presidential candidate under Joe Biden, it was understood at the time that there was an understanding that he would choose a woman of color as his vice presidential candidate. And she was the most available person. But she has done nothing to improve her electability. And in the end, public acceptance is what it's about. However, if she gets out of politics on a racial basis, it will be a catastrophe for her because the country is moving on. You see it even among minority groups. They're moving on from that. They don't want to racialize everything. So she's in a very tough spot.
Right. I think that, you know, I think it's fair to say that once Obama became president and the country had its first black president, I think the novelty's over. I really do.
Yes.
I think the novelty is over. I think that people want to, they want to get over this. And in fact, we're going to talk in a minute about an article from Andrew Sullivan about the media. But I was watching Andrew Sullivan last night on TV. They were interviewing him, and he was saying, Andrew Sullivan, the writer, I think he's English, but an American citizen. And he was saying that the country's fed up with all this, you know, race stuff, and everything's about race. You know, that it just, after a while, it just, everybody's fed up with it. You know, they don't want to be called racist just because they disagree with you.
That's right.
I think that, I think with Harris, what could happen with her is that, you know, she's beginning to realize that people don't like her, not because she's black, but simply because she's not up to the job. And I think Americans ought to take that very seriously. I take it very seriously, Bill, that there's somebody in the Oval Office who's up to the job. I mean, I take that very seriously. And apparently a lot of Americans do, too, and they don't think she's ready, Bill.
I think, and she isn't. She's not demonstrated any ability. Now, it is certainly true that when Harry Truman took over for Franklin Roosevelt in 1945, upon Roosevelt's death, April 12, 1945, there were many people who called him the little man from Missouri. But in fact, he wasn't a little man. He was actually a very well-known senator, one of the best-known senators. He had been on the cover of Time magazine for his work as head of the Truman Committee during World War II. When you look back on Kamala Harris, she has held some posts, but there is no record of accomplishment. She has run in elections. She ran for president. She antagonized a lot of people when she first came to Washington as a U.S. senator, and the press started talking about her as a future president. And her fellow senator from California, Dianne Feinstein, who was far more senior, said, look, she just got here. Meaning that was a message to Harris, saying, mm-hmm. you know, sister, there are a lot of people ahead of you, and but she immediately was thought of that way. She was also called. Oh, you remember that Kamala Harris? I'm sorry, that President Obama called Kamala Harris the hottest Attorney General when she was Attorney General of California, and had to apologize for it because he was mm-hmm. talking about her looks. He said, I shouldn't have said that. But she's always been very attractive. But politically, she seems to have lost her marbles because she can't seem to get on a track that is successful. She's married to a very bright lawyer, her husband, a very nice man. The country is moving on. I think that is mm-hmm. really the story here, more than Kamala Harris, that the country, as you said correctly, will not see her as a novelty, but just as another candidate, and they're past that. And I think Virginia proved it.
Exactly. As I told somebody, I was in Univision here recently, and I told somebody that who would have believed this, that the Virginia would elect not only Youngkin as governor, but the first African-American lieutenant governor, a Republican lady who is wonderful to listen to, and a Hispanic attorney general. That's Virginia who did that, Republicans in Virginia who did that. So, I mean, when somebody throws me the race card, I throw it right back and say, wait a minute, check out the results in Virginia and tell me how that's racist, Bill.
Of course. And isn't it interesting that nobody seems to want to talk about one of the most important things that came out of that election in Virginia mm-hmm. is that the Republican ticket won the Hispanic vote.
Right.
It wasn't one of these, they got a few points more than the last Republican candidate. They actually won it. That is an earthquake in politics because the Democratic Party today basically is a party of individual groups, and they have to get those groups to stay in existence, not simply to stay in power. They are losing the Hispanic vote. They are losing the Asian American vote. I can't imagine any reason for any Asian American to vote for the Democrats. They haven't done a thing for them. And in mm-hmm. fact, they treat them with contempt, and they're now beginning to lose the Jewish vote. And you start losing these ethnic groups, there's no Democratic Party. They will never win a national election again.
Yeah,
and they do not have much of a – they don't have much of a bench. I mean, you look at the Democratic Party. Who are they going to run for president? Well,
they
don't have much of a bench.
They don't have. They don't really have governors that could step in. I mean, they actually have or had two pretty decent governors in 2016. In 2020, the governor of Montana, who since retired, and the governor of Louisiana, who was reelected in a very red state. But these two guys, I think, would have been very helpful to Joe Biden on his ticket. Unfortunately, they're white men, and he was under instructions
right.
that it had to be a black woman. And that's why Kamala Harris was elected. But I think another point about Kamala Harris, and you mentioned it, is that when you're from California, when you're a Democrat from California, you're never going to get any tough questions. So you're never going to have to stand on your feet and answer a lot of tough questions. And what she's going through right now is that she's getting the kinds of questions she never got before. Like she was recently asked about inflation, and she sounded so silly in her answer. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, you don't make mistakes like that when you get to her level. You're supposed to make those mistakes when you're running for the U.S. Congress, Bill.
Yes, and she is now touting her performance in France, where she attended a conference, ironically, on immigration. And
right.
people are asking, well, what performance? I mean, she made a couple of good statements, and she did. I noted that at Urgent Agenda about different issues, about the danger of Russia. She made a couple of statements about Russia and the Ukraine. But a couple of statements doesn't do it because they get buried. What she
mm-hmm.
should do if she really wants to stay and be a contender is she has to go out on a speaking tour around the country. She has an ideal opportunity because she can speak on behalf of Democratic candidates and give serious speeches and appear as a serious person. And
right.
and I don't know if Biden will let her. I mean, he's the president. He can give her the orders. But she probably at this point is almost irredeemable. You know, people get used up very quickly in politics these days,
mm-hmm.
and the point has been made. I was interested for example, just a few weeks ago, there was a very important development in education with the formation of the University of Austin, which will be a new school, college and university based on traditional practices, traditional principles, and traditional educational standards. It is unique. It is the people behind it are fantastic. They're people who think the way we do. And the man who is founding it, who is going to be the president, was the president of St. John's College in Annapolis, which is one of the great liberal arts schools in the United States and teaches the great books. And he said, when asked, well, why don't you want to reform the schools that exist already, he said it's too late. And a lot of people are thinking that way, that these institutions and a lot of the people behind these institutions are obsolete. They have had
mm-hmm.
they've had their say, and it's time for new institutions and new people. And she's trapped in that. And I think that is a point of view that is growing and is widespread, and she will be seen as a person of the past.
Right. I agree. I just don't think she's got anything going for her right now. And to some extent, maybe she's a victim of an administration that is having to deal with some very serious issues like inflation and the border. I mean, a lot of issues that probably she had nothing to do with directly, but issues that she's paying for. So maybe this is just an administration in the middle of just a crisis of many, many problems that they just don't have any idea how to deal with, Bill, because they're all self-inflicted. I mean, all of these problems are self-inflicted. How different would our conversation today be if Biden had kept the Trump policy on the border, had simply kept the pipelines open? Okay, how different would we would have right now probably much lower gas prices, and we certainly wouldn't have the inflation we have, and we wouldn't have the mess on the border that we have. All of those completely self-inflicted, though.
Absolutely. Well, and now Biden wants to bring into his administration this Russian-born, is she Russian-born woman to be controller of the currency, who said she wants American companies to go bankrupt. That's really a great thing to have on your record.
Right.
I mean, I don't know where he gets these people. I don't think Biden knows a lot of the people he's appointed. And he's taking the recommendations of people who are on the left wing of the party. I think he should know by now that you can never satisfy the left wing of the party. They are irreconcilable. They are irredeemable. And no matter what he does for them, they're going to ask for more. And I think you have a Democratic Party that is in desperate trouble. Now, obviously, we're speaking from the viewpoint of a year before the midterms. And anything can happen in that year. Biden can get his sea legs and do some things that actually work. I don't think he will, but he could. He could have some luck. Luck plays a role in these things. And Kamala Harris can shut up and just be there. And maybe they can squeeze out, if not a victory in the midterms, a respectable defeat. But right now, I don't see anything on the horizon that the Democratic Party can be happy about.
No, I mean, it's a total disaster. And we're going to talk about one of those disasters on the other side when we talk about the latest congressional polls that are just amazing. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with Bill right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We're talking about the Democrats and some of their problems. And Bill, I was listening to Dick Morris. Now, you know, he doesn't always say everything right. I mean, he has a 50-50 record or whatever in making predictions. But what he was saying today made a lot of sense. He says, I've never seen this congressional generic, as they call it, between the two parties. I've never seen one party up by 10 points, which is what the latest poll has the Republicans up by. He says, I've seen it 5 and 6, and that resulted in the 1994 wipeout or the 2010 wipeout, but I've never seen it 10 points. And he was even speculating that, that could spell even 100 seats that could change. I think that's too many, but still, that's an interesting argument, but I've never seen polling data like this. I've never seen a president down under 40% at this stage of his presidency, Bill. So, I don't know where they go from here. I agree with you. I don't think there's anything he can do to turn this around because the inflation is going to be here probably until the spring, at least. And it's only going to get worse and worse before that, before it starts to go away, Bill.
I think you're right, and it will get worse, and it'll get worse in part because it is not being addressed, and in part because inflation is something that people see every day. It isn't an abstract issue like Southeast Asia. It's something they see every time they fill up that gas tank, and they look at that, the little thing in the window that says $4.19 for gasoline, and if it goes to $4 and $5 and $6, and it can, and the Republicans hammer home the fact that it is doing that largely because of actions by the Biden administration in cutting down on domestic production of fuel. We are not energy independent anymore. We have to go begging around the world, whereas we were energy independent when Donald Trump left office. People see it, as you put it, as a self-inflicted wound, and they're going to see other things as self-inflicted wounds. I mean, I have no doubt that there's going to be a faction in Congress that within the next 3 or 4 months will move to enlarge the Supreme Court, and they may succeed. I don't think they'll succeed, but they may. And that will be seen also as crackpotism, as extremism. They now have candidates running around the country for Democratic nominations who are open, if not Marxist, socialists, and basically socialists are Marxists, but it's a lighter form of it. It's without the bite.
Right.
And the party itself seems nowhere. I mean, it seems to be a party living in the past, living in the 1960s, They don't seem to care. I think the notion of winning is much less important to them than the notion of being politically correct. And I see a Republican Party, on the other hand, that is aggressive, that is really ready to move in many places, not in all, not in New York, where they don't know there's an election next year. They will be informed by mail, I think. But they are have become aggressive. They become much more aware of how to win elections. And Virginia gave them the perfect example of how to win an election. And I think that if things go the way they're going now, it's possible the Democrats could lose 50 seats. And while that would not be a record, it would be a substantial loss. The key will be in the Senate, where the map is much more difficult for the Republicans. But I think they could flip that map. If they become aggressive in every state, they can flip that map. And there are states, obviously, that the Democrats now are going to get aggressive in, thinking they can flip those states. And Texas is one of them. I see Beto is actually running for governor.
Right.
And I don't know what you feel about that. I'd love to hear your perspective since you are a Texan. Do you think he can beat Governor Abbott?
No, I don't. I really don't, because this is not 2018. 2018, everything was working for Beto O'Rourke, including running against Ted Cruz, who was not as good a candidate as Abbott is. But I think it's interesting. Governor Abbott is already running ads against Beto O'Rourke.
Yes.
they had their first out, their ads today, and it's pretty tough. It shows me that he's going to be very tough on Beto. And all they're going to do is use whatever words he himself said during the campaign for president. They're going to use it against them. Texas Tribune, and I'll send you this after the podcast, Texas Tribune just published an article saying that Beto is a much weaker candidate this time around. So, no, I mean, to answer your question, no, I expect Abbott to win, 10 points probably, something like that, which is about what I expect him to win. But Beto generates a lot of excitement on the Republican side, but I'm not sure he generates that much excitement on the Democrat side. Again, this is different than 2018. 2018, he was like he was trying to do a Bobby Kennedy on us, but he also wasn't running around, he wasn't running around saying he was going to take your guns away. So he was a much better candidate, really, in 2018 than he is now, Bill.
I think that's true. He did style himself after Bobby Kennedy, and with the change in the population, and I think you alluded to it just a minute ago, the Democratic Party in every poll isn't enthusiastic about its own president.
There is a lot of
objection to Biden. Now, part of it, of course, is coming from the real left of the party, but the real left of the party does not have anywhere near the electoral power that it thinks it has. I mean, AOC is saying that the problem in Virginia was that they didn't go far enough left. If she thinks that's the problem, good riddance to her.
Right.
She's
going to find out some surprises.
Oh, she will. Now, there is some talk here that her congressional district might be cut up. That would be interesting to see if she survives. There is also talk, there still is, that she might challenge Chuck Schumer for the Democratic Senate nomination, which is up next year, apparently believing that all her fans in New York City will overcome the rest of the state and send the Senate Majority Leader home. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think she could give him a good scare because there are enough nutcases in New York to vote for her to at least provide a contest. If she were smart, she would try to do her job a little bit better.
Yeah. Well, she would maybe try to bring some jobs to her district. She doesn't seem to do a good job of that. But no, I don't think Beto O'Rourke could win. Now, of course, anything can change, but I don't think he's got the basis for winning. I just don't. I just don't see that. And all the things that he said, probably the worst thing that ever happened to Beto O'Rourke is that he ran for president and that he took so many left-wing positions that are just going to come back to haunt him in this campaign. I mean, what he said about guns. I mean, there's just too many things that he said that he probably wishes he hadn't said, because Governor Abbott is going to go right after him. And you should take a look at his first ad, and I think you'll get a taste of the fact that Governor Abbott is not going to be easy on Beto. They're going to nail him on his driving record. Remember the driving record that he had? They're going to nail him on that, and they're going to go after him. They're going to go after him with full force. They're not. I mean, I think sometimes I thought Ted Cruz maybe took him for granted and was too easy on him. I don't think you'll see that from Abbott, Bill.
No, I think Abbott has exactly the right idea. You have to get in early, and you have to punch. You have to basically destroy the opposition. Politics is a contact sport, and too often Republicans have been too gentlemanly. Now, of course, the ideal way of doing it, but it takes the art of a Ronald Reagan, was Ronald Reagan. He was a tough puncher, but he did it with a twinkle in his eye. And you always knew, well, he's basically a nice guy. And that combination won over voters. They liked him. Reagan was a likable guy, and he would say, "Well, there you go again." I mean, he didn't do what Trump does, which is to destroy people. He knocked them down, and he made it very plain what he thought. But he did it in a way where he kept his humanity, and it was a wonderful performance of good retail politics.
Another interesting thing, Bill, you mentioned Trump, and I was listening to Selena Zito this morning on Hugh Hewitt. Now, you know who she is. She's a wonderful writer,
reporter.
Course. She actually goes out and talks to people, Bill, which is what makes her so remarkable. She actually goes out and talks to voters. She doesn't just, write articles about polling data. She actually goes out and talks to people. And she was on TV this morning, basically on the radio, I should say, this morning, saying that when she goes out and talks to voters, that people aren't talking about Trump. The Democrats think that all that people want to talk about is Trump. But in fact, no, they got other issues, inflation, gasoline prices, the overall state of the country. That's what's driving voters. So the Democrat shows up, and all he does is talk about Trump and how terrible Trump is, and people are saying, wait a minute, he's not the president anymore. I just paid $4 for gasoline. Let's talk about
that.
And so there's a mindset. They seem disconnected from reality, Bill. And I'll just say one quick thing before we move on, because I do want to talk to you about what's happening in New York with the mayor-elect and also media narratives. But there's a lady. Her name is Maria Cardona. I think I sent you the article last week. Maria Cardona is a Hispanic lady. She's a Democrat. And she also has done some work at CNN as a contributor. And she wrote an article last week telling the Democrats that you may be losing the Hispanic vote. You can no longer count on the Hispanic vote as a given. And she went through some very interesting points in her article. And that's what I think Beto and many of these Texas Democrats here don't know or cannot understand what's going on. We just had a major development in South Texas, Bill, today. A Democrat is switching parties. A Democrat in the state, a state representative, is switching parties to run as a Republican in South Texas. Well, that tells me he wouldn't have done that 4 years ago. So that tells me that there's something going on in South Texas I think a lot of it has to do with the border policies that are making it very difficult to run as a Democrat, Bill.
I hope so. Look, the thing that surprises me in all this is that there's no talk of a third party. You would think with the Democratic Party and the condition it's in, that traditional Democrats would get together and say, look, this is not fixable. We have to have a new party, and we will eventually become the real Democratic Party. And you don't even hear any word of it. Now, maybe there's word out there, and the press is doing its usual terrible job. Isn't it interesting, by the way, that the press is falling behind the times? They report the world as if it was the world of 15 years ago, and it isn't. It's a different society today. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Democrats were really beaten next year and were in complete chaos. I would not be surprised if there was a new party that was born.
I think it'd be good for them. It'd be good for the country.
Oh yes,
to have a more centrist Democrat Party. But one of the big stories I think last week was an article by Andrew Sullivan. Now, Andrew Sullivan is a controversial fellow. I know, you know, I've had my disagreements with him before, and, you know, he's not 100% someone who I agree with. But I think he does make a lot of sense sometimes. And he wrote an article about the media, and he went through like 8 or 9 or 10 of recent media narratives that have all gone bad. You know, he went back to the Covington kids. Remember the young man from Covington High School? Remember the two college students who were accused by a young black woman of rape or something, and they were put through the ringer, these two young white men. Eventually, the whole thing had to be backed out. But, I mean, the damage is done. These two young men forever.
Oh, of course.
There will be crap in the Internet about them for the rest of their lives. So he went through a bunch of them, you know, the incident in Chicago where the guy said that he was attacked at 3 o'clock in the morning by two people wearing MAGA hats, and just went one after another. And, of course, the latest one, perhaps the biggest one, the Russia thing. And he just went one after another. And, you know, it's just embarrassing for the media, Bill, what we're seeing. All of these narratives turned out to be false. How can you believe anything that they write, Bill?
Well, that's the point. They have lost their marbles, and they have lost their reason for being. And one of the reasons they've lost it is that people today, even of modest means, have computers. They turn to the Internet, and they see other news sources that are far more interesting and are far more persuasive in their manner than the so-called big news organizations. I mean, why would anybody actually watch CNN? I mean, maybe if your plane is late. If your plane is late, you might be forced to watch CNN at the airport. But this is an organization that took a gamble and became the anti-Trump network. And that was its reason for being. They needed Donald Trump. They probably wish he would run again and win again because it would bring them back. But why would anybody actually watch CNN? It doesn't break news stories. It's very tired. You can almost predict exactly what they will say in any story because they're now such a completely biased network. And people say, I can do better. I can get better information from another source. And that's what's happening. I think that journalism, like the academic world, may be irredeemable, and we may need new news organizations to replace the old ones.
Yeah. Well, I certainly hope so, because it does make you – I mean, it makes you – every time you read a story now and you hear people close to the information or people close to the investigation – people, you know, close to the situation, people with knowledge of the situation. Maybe at one time, you gave the media the benefit of the doubt, Bill, on stories like that, and you said, okay, well, maybe they're talking to somebody for real. But after all of these examples, you have to wonder, I'm not going to believe anything more where they say a source close to the information, Bill, because I have no idea who they're talking about. It could be someone who lives in the same planet as you know.
Yes.
There doesn't seem to be any credibility for me to believe it.
I think you're absolutely right. And as I said, the media is committing the worst sin the media can commit, or certainly one of the worst. It's falling behind the times. You listen to them, they sound as if they're in a world of years ago. I mean, first of all, the obsession with race, everything, as you pointed out earlier, race this, race that, gender this. As soon as it was suggested that the Supreme Court be expanded, the very next day people were out, and every candidate they mentioned was a woman of color. Now, that's fine. If that's the best candidate, sure, why not? But that's not the way they think. They don't think in terms of the best candidate or the best office holder or what's best for the country. It's what's best for the cause. And the cause is the kind of socialist society that they're gunning for. And Americans have apparently made their choice about that society. And the fact that the revolt that we're seeing now began with parents is golden for the Republican Party, because it is seen as the family party. And there were interviews last week in Nassau County, where I grew up on Long Island, where Democrats were interviewed, and they sound like Republicans. Mm-hmm. They're so fed up with what's happening and with what their party is doing. I think that the Democrats have miscalculated, they've underestimated the voters, and they've overestimated the intelligence of reporters.
That's right. I think you're right, especially about that last one. Well, Bill, one story that is really interesting for those of us who don't live in New York, but I think it could have national implications, is the battle, and he's still the mayor-elect. He hasn't taken office yet. He will, I guess, in 45 days. But Mayor-elect Adams is hearing it from some local leaders. I'm not sure exactly what group this guy is from, but they're saying if you do that again, the city's going to burn, there's going to be riots. And explain that situation and tell me how you think the mayor-elect has reacted to it, Bill.
The mayor-elect has reacted magnificently. He is becoming very rapidly a shrewd star. There's this guy who is a former member or official of Black Lives Matter, and he is now running a kind of a breakoff group. I don't think that Black Lives Matter wants to have anything to do with him. He apparently has had problems before getting along with people. Apparently he has some things in his record that are not terribly favorable. And he did threaten that if the mayor-elect goes back to some of the old ways in the police department, reconstituting, for example, the anti-crime unit, which was so successful and was shut down on the demands of black leaders on the grounds that it was racist, which it was not, that if you do that, the city's going to burn, as you said, and there's going to be bloodshed. And this stunned the city that anybody would make such a blatantly violence-favored statement. And Adam said, no, it's not going to be a violent city, and it's not going to be a city where things burn. He did not directly confront the individual, but he put him down. And now we're waiting for the next blow to be struck. It is obvious that there are elements in the city council, which is very left-wing here, that don't want the new mayor to succeed, that agree with this guy, and will try something. But I think this is a man on his way to a very successful mayoralty, because he senses what the people feel, and he does not go along with the extremists just to go along with the extremists. This is an exciting time in New York because the city needs to be saved. The city is not the city it was. It's becoming dry rot again, very high crime rate, very, very poor education. De Blasio did almost everything possible to damage his city, and people can't wait for him to get out of office. And Eric Adams, he is black. He's a former police officer. He's also the former or the current borough president of Brooklyn. And he seems to have his ear to the ground. He has not made a mistake thus far, and he expresses himself very well. I'm excited about him. I hope he succeeds.
Well, I am too, because, you know, the city of New York, I was talking to a person yesterday whose daughter has moved out of New York. She and her husband, I mean, this daughter and her husband have moved out of New York, and they would like to go back, but they think it's a bit unsafe, the city. They're in the entertainment business, this young couple, and they say that people are not going out like before because they're afraid of going out.
Yes,
and
that's
you
true.
Know, and just, you know, and just having to face, if not violence, you know, just people stealing your purse or whatever. And they think this is having a tremendous impact, negative impact on their business. So if he could turn around the city, if he could make people feel safe again, not only is he going to be a very good governor, I mean, a very good mayor, Bill, I see him as a potential governor, and I see him as part of that centrist Democrat party that we were talking about before, a party that understands
yes.
that you got to have police on the streets, Bill.
Well, he says, I am the future of the Democratic Party. He said it, and people kind of at first laughed, but they're not laughing anymore because they see what happened in Virginia. And they see that he has been elected in New York, and he may be the future of the Democratic Party, which will be a party that depends on the moderate factions in each group, not the most extreme factions. Because it's been pointed out, even African-Americans seem very unhappy with the Democratic Party.
Absolutely. I mean, how could you be happy with a party that tolerates this kind of lawlessness? I mean, who benefits from that kind of lawlessness? It's certainly not the people who live in their neighborhoods, Bill.
That's true. Well, yes, 95% of all the fatalities by gunshot in New York City are African-American, 95% of the victims. It's just a ghastly situation. How can they be happy? And then somebody comes along and says, defund the police. They depend
right.
on the police.
Absolutely.
And they have seen that they've seen what good police work can do. It was done in their communities with Mayor Giuliani and Mayor Bloomberg. Their communities became safer. Now they're becoming more dangerous again. And they have common sense and they have kids.
Right.
I mean, in Chicago, you have a mayor who is a woman. She's black and she's a lesbian. She checks off 3 boxes. And that's all they cared about. That's all they cared about. Lori Lightfoot is no mayor. I mean, she's a farce. She says the crime rate is caused by white supremacy. It is not. And I don't know how long she can last, but Chicago is in terrible shape.
Oh, Chicago is just absolutely a mess. I didn't think anybody could come close to Baltimore, but Chicago seems to be trailing, you know, running behind Baltimore. And, and it's just a mess. It's just an absolute mess. But New York City is a very special place, Bill, as you know. And having
yes.
a city that runs well, having a city that works well, having a city that is safe, is so good, not just for the people who live there, but for everybody else who loves to go to New York City. I mean, I've always wanted to go to New York City, for example, at Christmas time, to see all the lights and see
yes.
all of that stuff. I mean, it's just absolutely no other place in the world like it at New York at Christmas time, you know, everything. But I wouldn't want to do it now. I bet it's unsafe, Bill.
Well, it is unsafe. There is crime on the streets. It is true that it is mostly localized in certain neighborhoods. But and as far as the delightful parts of New York, a lot of them are closed down or are struggling just to survive. So it is not the vibrant city it was. And I think that Eric Adams has a chance of regaining that New York, but there are people against him who don't want that New York to come back. They like a city that's dull and drab and on the edge of revolution because that's their way of thinking. And some of them are on the city council.
I hope that the mayor-elect – oh, yeah, I mean, there's some nuts in your city council, I will tell you that. But I just hope the mayor-elect, soon to be mayor, really puts his foot down and say, no, it's going to be a safe city, and I'm going to put – One more thing I'll say about this, Bill. If you're a police officer, wouldn't you love to have a mayor who has your back?
Exactly. Exactly. Now, he in the past has been critical of the police. He was, a head of an organization when he was in the police department. I think it was a black organization that was very critical of certain parts of the department, and there is still resentment toward him in the department for that. However, he is making it clear that he will have the backs of police officers who act properly. And I think that's the best we can get, and I think it is the exact right position to take. He said we expect the highest standards on the part of the police, but we will have their back. And I think people have been waiting to hear that.
Right. Well, I am, and I don't live there. But I just know how
You're
important
right.
New York City is to the country. I mean, it's not the capital of the country, but you know what I mean. It's New York City. Every time
sure.
people think of New York City, they think of the capital of the world. You know, it's like
That's
the greatest American city, and to see it devastated as you've seen it lately is sad. So hopefully it makes a comeback so it can be what it was, at least under Giuliani. I thought he did a great job. Well, Bill,
he did.
A wonderful week, and thank you so much for your time as always. And we'll get back at this next week again. But thank you so much for your time, and keep up the great work at the Urgent Agenda, Bill.
Well, thank you, Silvio. I look forward to our next session. I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about.
Well, I'm sure we will. Thank you so much, and have a great week.
Same to you, Silvio.
All right. Our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, thank you very much for listening. Enjoy your day. This is Silvio Canto, and we'll talk to you later.